Okay, Al, so we're back and we have a frozen prototype.
Right.
And we need to move on from here. So we're going to quickly progress now through architecting and coding and the whole rest of it.
Okay.
So where do we go?
The next phase of this, we have now determined everything that we need to determine. The dev notes are off, the prototype's frozen. At this point, I print out another copy of the prototype in black and white,
Okay.
all the pages, and I do what I call a prototype markup, where I come with two different colored highlighters.
You only use two?
Yeah.
Oh man.
You use many more?
I four usually.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's probably better.
Yeah. But anyway, go ahead and tell me what you do with
Well,
two
what
and
I
then
do is I highlight all of the exit points on the prototype. In other words, any link or button, anything, any way to leave this page and go somewhere else.
right.
That's one color. The other color is any variables.
Okay.
If it's a simple variable like, welcome Jeff, then that Jeff gets highlighted. Any variables that are going out, like, enter your email, that gets highlighted. And then I provide names. I provide names for, they're sort of quasi fuse actions. They are, what would I call this thing if I knew nothing about the architecture, but I just saw the page? So if it, for example, a product display, I would say something like display product info. And what, so I do that for every exit point, what we call an exit fuse action, XFA.
Right.
And I do it for how did I get to this page, right? And then I give all of the variables names. And if it's something big, like I'm getting in a collection of information, like here are all the products that match your search. Well, that result set, if it's a, at that point I don't really determine is this a record set or an array or whatever. I know it's a collection.
Right.
I give that a label, and then I give the individual columns, if you will, sticking with the data set idea, names. And I do that for all of the prototype pages.
Okay, now I do it a little bit differently in that I will use one color for you say variables, I say dynamic elements on the page.
Yeah.
So anything that's going to be come out of a query or a variable or something like that. So dynamic elements get the first color. The second color is for exit points. The third color is for variables or data points that will go along with an exit. So data that needs to be carried with an exit. I'm trying to remember what I used the fourth one for. But at any rate, the point is that whether you use two colors or four colors, the idea is your markup is consistent among all your pages, and the objective is to identify the dynamic elements and the particularly exit points, and then the actions, so the movement from one page to the next.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Then so now I take all of those. I take the all of the exit points, right? The display, product info, add item to cart, whatever it is, and I put those into a visual outlining tool. Now, you've done a lot of research and work with those. I discovered one 5 years ago, and I typically use that, even though it's not probably the best one, but I use one called Visual Mind.
Right. And I've looked at a whole bunch of the mind mapping tools, software tools that are available. I settled on one called Mind Mapper because a couple of versions ago, a couple of years ago, it was the only one available that would allow you to import a text file as well as export one. I started out working in Visual Mind, as you're well aware, when we were working together on the whole FuseMinder concept that we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, and Visual Mind works really well for that, but I wanted to go the reverse step as well and be able to reverse engineer an existing Fusebox app, and Mind Mapper let me do that at that time. Subsequent versions later, Visual Mind's capable of doing the same thing. So I think it's really just a matter of preferences in terms of of visual effects more than anything else that separate those two products. There's a whole bunch of other ones.
Mind Manager.
Right. MindJet is one. Mind Manager. There's people keep sending me all the time links to new products, and there are a whole bunch of them that have come and gone. But what you need is a mind mapping tool that can save the mind map in an outline format.
Right, right. Because so, what I want from this, Jeff, is I want to be able to list all of the exit points and all of the actions that got me to that page, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, display page info is an action that got me to look at this page, you know, product information page, but then add item to the cart, that's another action. All of these get listed just at the same level with sort of no discrimination. And then I use an old OO technique, which is helpful, and I look for recurring nouns. Mm-hmm. For example, if I have add item to cart, remove item from cart, display cart, I have a pretty good idea that cart is going to be a circuit in Fusebox. And a circuit is simply a collection of fuse actions that are all related somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now, how they are related, it's always in the mind of the architect, and different people probably would come up with different circuits.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll now create the various circuits, and I'll drag these fuse actions, and at this point I'm going to change their name. So if I had add item to cart, remove item to cart, I'm going to have cart, and then I'll just simply say add item, remove item. Right, so we're starting to develop a hierarchy now.
Okay.
And what I'm really discovering is are the circuits and the fuse actions that are going to make up my application.
Right.
I sometimes call it a schematic, sort of sticking with the fuse box analogy. But the point is, it's something that can be visually shown. I can print out, or better yet, run through a plotter and see at a glance my entire architecture.
Yeah, you just reminded me of the other feature that I like a lot about Mind Mapper. Is that when you print, one of the options to print is to include an architect style info box and down in the corner of the printout, and you can incorporate your own logo and things like that. So you have a nice little bit of information that includes the name of the thing, the date you printed it, project, the architect's name, the project name, all that kind of stuff. And that's just a nice little professional touch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So while I'm doing this, I'm trying out different ideas. Now I have little icons associated with each element. Like circuits have one icon that I use. Fuse actions are the next level, right? And they have another circuit. And then I ask myself for each of these fuse actions. First of all, that gives me everything I can visually identify. Right? But let's say that we have something like a login. Right, I'm going to be able to see my login page, and I'll be able to see, you know, the main page or whatever. But what I don't see is the action that actually validated them, authorized them.
Right.
So that gives me a good number of the right fuse actions, but I still have to go through and say, all right, what do I know that I need to do that I can't visually see? Because those become fuse actions as well.
How do I get from here to there?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Any kind of processing that's not visually, you know, that doesn't show up on a prototype page.
And doing that in a mind map works really well because you have the visual representation of the circuits and the fuse actions. I remember back in, probably around the time of, your first or second article for CFDJ, there was the old Nerf ball idea.
Oh, yes.
Which was a terrific idea, and I've actually used a couple of times, but the existence of mind mapping software means you can actually do that process on a screen and instead of in a group environment.
Right.
And the idea, just to kind of review real quickly, the idea behind the Nerf ball idea was that we could write fuse actions out on note cards, and the Nerf ball was the message, the action at the time. And so in order to move the ball, to give the ball to somebody else, you had to know what action needed to be done, and somebody else had to have that action. And so it was a way to physically represent holes in the progression of the action.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a fun thing to do if you had a team environment to work in. Of course, a lot of fuse boxers aren't fortunate to have a team available, and so it kind of, that makes the Nerf ball game really boring unless you're a multiple personality type. And so the mind mapping software can be really good as a way to follow the action from one fuse action to another on screen.
Absolutely. Now, I recommend strongly that people, particularly when they're starting off, that you do this in pairs. Because the stuff that you're doing now is extremely high value and very, very critical. In some of my classes, I talk about the normal software process, not the flip process, as being sort of inverted pyramid, where you start at the top and you're working your way down. When you get to the bottom, that's when the time runs out, right? Well, at the top, we have this broad area where you got lots of people involved, everybody's making suggestions. Then, as we go farther down and we sort of take a cross-section of that pyramid, there's less surface area, there's less people involved in the process, and there's more pressure and less time. And we finally get down to that single point where you're working alone at 2 in the morning trying to furiously finish up a project. And part of the problem is that to make any change to the, or to make really any contribution, you have to understand the whole system.
Right.
And this is why when the sort of mythical 16-year-old CEO's nephew can come in and help you, well, if you've ever had that situation without something like Flip, they're nothing but a distraction.
Right.
And Fred Brooks talked about this in the Mythical Man Month.
Yeah, but it's such a waste of time to teach somebody what they need to know in order to do anything on the project.
Yeah, and the person who has to teach them is typically your most senior developer because they're the only one who understands the full scope. So, and sort of playing on that, you know, flip pun, flip around the pyramid, and now when we start at the top, we have the point of the pyramid. We have room for two people, and they're making critical decisions, right? They're deciding all of the fuse actions, the variables, the variable types. This is very high-value stuff that they're doing. And having somebody else there with you, particularly when you first start out in the process, is really valuable.
In the architectural process.
Right.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I find also that it can be really valuable if you do have a team environment to take the newest person and pair them with, if not the most senior, certainly as senior as possible, a person. And it becomes very interesting to watch which direction the questions start coming from. It can be a very educational process in both directions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've told you about this before, but I was doing a very large job, and there were only three developers, me, a fellow I'd had about half time and was a good developer, and then this young guy who had been a pizza delivery boy a month and a half earlier. And that pizza delivery boy and I worked very, very closely together. And talking through that process with him, explaining it, was extremely helpful for me. Because it's one thing when you think in your head, I understand how everything works. You try to articulate that, and you try to draw it out on a diagram, and you find that there are huge holes. You know, we want to find those holes before any code gets written. So part of this process is coming up with that schematic. So we've identified, sort of, if you think in terms of an outline, the first level are the circuits.
Mm-hmm.
The second level are the fuse actions, which right. are in what which we have. We have something like add an item. Who's going to do that's an atom, that's an action. Who's going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
The cart circuit will take care of that. Okay, great. Now I ask, what does it mean to add that item to the cart? What does it mean? Yeah. Well, it probably, or maybe we ought to check to see if the product's in stock, right? So we'll have to go out and check the inventory. Oh, okay, so there's another fuse action. Do I have that? If I don't, I'm going to put that in there. Who should handle that? The cart? No, not the cart. Probably an inventory circuit. You know, so now I've discovered another circuit that I need and another. Mm-hmm. Now with Fusebox 4, this makes it really very, very easy to have to segregate the actions into their appropriate circuits. Prior to Fusebox 4, it was a little bit harder because we had to use a CF module, and it had a performance penalty. But with Fusebox 4, it makes it very easy. But I'm asking myself, what does it mean? I'm either going to discover a fuse action, like that inventory.check, or I'm going to say, you know what, I need a fuse, an individual file, to do this. So that's my third level, is all of the individual fuses that I need for this. If I'm going to do something like, let's go back to a real simple thing, like somebody logs in. If they log in, I've got to have some fuse whose job it is to query a database or read an LDAP server or something like that, and gets the information. Then I need to have another fuse that checks that to see, let's say that we're running this database, and I want to know, hey, did I get any record count? Is my record count greater than zero? In other words, do I have somebody that meets the criteria that, and so I'm going to have two. Now, I separate these, even though one fuse is very, very small. And the reason that I do that is for a couple things. First of all, if I'm going to have queries, I would like to have files that do nothing but queries. Why? Because, again, if I'm lucky enough to have a good database person, I can hand all of those off to the database person. They don't have to worry about the logic or what happens if there's a record count or there's not a record count. They just have to do that. The other reason that I like to have that is to keep my files as small as possible so that they're reusable. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the holy grail of programming, but frankly, I think the much more important thing is so that the application becomes more maintainable. And everything else being equal, small files are easier to write, they're easier to test, and when things have to change, they're easier to make changes to.
Absolutely, and I encourage that strongly in team environments, particularly in that it's so much easier to deal with maintenance issues when you can hand a developer one or two very small modules for two reasons. First of all, it's much easier for them to isolate the code that needs to be worked on, and second of all, it prevents them from mucking up other code in the process. So the smaller the fuse is, the less general impact it has when it's changed.
Absolutely right. And then the intelligence of the application is not big files that do a bunch of stuff. It's little files that do little, small, discrete pieces. And the circuit XML file, is where you specify. And it's a matter of how you wire these pieces together. And it's really very similar to the way we design things like electronic components, right? If the difference between a CD player and a amplifier, if they both use transistors. We don't have special amplifier transistors. It's just a transistor. It's just how you wire the thing together. And this is true with Fusebox. What we're trying to get are fuses that are agnostic about the application and the context of the application in which they run. So once I've determined all of the fuses that I need, I go through and I make notes. Most of these mind mapping softwares have places to make notes. And I'll make notes about what variables are coming in and what variables are going out. And these are just quick notes. Mm-hmm. But it sets me up for the next phase of the flip process.
Which is?
Writing fuse docs.
Okay, great.